I have a little surprise for you, listeners.
One question before we get started. Can you do your pronounce your full name for me?
Sure, it's Michelle Valji.
That's right. The creator of the new daytime soap opera, Beyond the Gates, that debuted in February.
It's actually Valjean, but I have enough trouble getting people to say Valjean, so.
Okay, I was like, oh God, I have said Valjean on the podcast, so I will.
That's okay. That's the really correct pronunciation.
Okay, all right. Well, we will keep that. I can do it.
I've been wanting to interview Michelle for over a year, and we finally had the chance to sit down over Zoom to talk. I was so excited.
I first want to know, what is your soap watching origin story? When did you start?
Like many of us, I come from a family of soap watching women. You know, my grandmother watched them, my mother watched them. So when I was coming up, I would watch them too. And you know, it's like developed a love for them.
Which ones were you all watching?
We were an ABC family, because remember, but back then you didn't change the channel. So it was All My Children, One Life to Live in General Hospital.
That was the same in my house.
But Michelle didn't stay as just a soap watcher. She went on to be a writer and now creator. She told me she went on an unconventional path to get to where she is now. We'll get into more details about that during a conversation you'll hear in this episode. And I want to warn you, we will be discussing rape. Michelle grew up as an only child in different places around the South Side of Chicago. She had what she calls a doting dad who died when she was only 11 years old.
I didn't have siblings, so I kind of heard my own drummer, and I marched to the beat of that. And, one of the things I wanted to do was sort of get out of expectations that other people had of me and do what I felt I was supposed to be doing.
She says she got into a lot of trouble following that path, but it also led her to where she is today, and she's grateful for it. And one moment along that path was when she knew she had to start writing for her beloved genre.
My ex-husband was a musical director, and he was rehearsing somebody in the living room. And this was when VCRs were first out, right? So I taped my soaps and watched them when I got home from work. And I was watching All My Children in the bedroom, and I was yelling dialogue at the screen. And then the light bulb went off over my head, and I went, that's what I should be doing.
At the time of this epiphany, she was an assistant to a writer-producer who was working on primetime network shows Magnum P.I., In the Heat of the Night, and Jake and the Fat Man. Michelle was reading through a lot of scripts to help her boss make selections for freelance writer positions. She got a feel for what made a good script and talked to a ton of agents. Michelle really connected to one particular woman who helped open doors for her. Meanwhile, her boss at Jake and the Fat Man let her throw story ideas out more and more in the writer's room.
And finally, one day I raised my hand and they said, just pull up a chair. So I came up with an idea for a Jake and the Fat Man. And to my surprise, they bought it. And so I wrote two scripts for Jake and the Fat Man. And at the same time, I had the agent that I liked. She had taken me on, even though I didn't have anything really to offer. But she knew Joern Winther, who was executive producing Generations.
Turns out they had just lost a writer on that show, which, as you might recall from episode 3 of Stories Without End, was the first Black daytime soap. Michelle interviewed with Winther, who sent her to Sally Sussman, the creator of Generations.
And she basically liked what I had to say, the way I thought, and she hired me over lunch.
So she quit her job and made her way into the writer's room of Generations. And she made a lasting impression on that show for many of us soap fans.
Did you write that infamous catfight scene on Generations?
I did.
It is. People still talk about that scene and still watch it on YouTube.
It's like every year it sort of comes back and goes viral again. It's so crazy. But yeah, I own that. Yeah.
What do you want?
I want to wipe this floor with you. Come get me, bitch. You think you're so bad, don't you? Well, I'm not easy to handle, girl. In fact, I just might be your worst nightmare. You have the nerve to come to my house and threaten me? You don't know the meaning of the word nightmare until you are tangled with me. I watched you tonight, hanging all over Daddy like some cheap suit. You're a slut, Doreen Jackson. You always will be. All the money in the world won't clean you up. You disgust me.
I don't care what you think. And Daniel Rubens loves me, and no little piece of street trash is gonna tell me otherwise.
You will never have my father.
I already have. And I will be having him again whenever I feel like it.
Witch!
Those women, we were in the writer's room when they shot it. And they did it in one take. Because, I mean, it's like they destroyed the set, basically.
I want to share with you now the rest of the conversation I had with Michelle. And quick note, we talked before she got the news of the second season, which if you've been listening closely to this show, an announcement like that is a very big deal. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. What were the differences between the craft of writing primetime versus daytime?
Well, Jake and the Fat Man was a procedural, you know, sort of it opened and closed every week. So it wasn't an ongoing, like serial kind of a situation. And it was, for me, it wasn't writing the scripts was it was a learning experience, but it wasn't a labor of love. Soaps were my labor of love. So when Sally Sussman hired me that day, I could not believe it. You know, it was like, oh my God, my dream is coming true. And I was only there for the last 6 months and then I got canceled. I was so happy to be there. I was so happy to write and to learn and to sit at her table with Tom Racina and Elizabeth Harrower and Bruce Nichols and these experienced writers and just soak up all of their knowledge and it was fun, you know, we laughed. And when it got canceled, it was devastating to me. It felt like a death in the family, you know? And I thought, I'll never write another soap, you know? It's like, there goes my one chance to write soaps. But then Santa Barbara called.
And what is your journey? How long were you at Santa Barbara? And then where did you go after that?
I was at Santa Barbara for the last 2 years. The Dobsons hired me, but then they got fired again. Bridget Dobson made me a script editor, which was terrifying because Santa Barbara had like the best writers in the business and best actors, I thought. I thought that show was just amazing. And the Dobsons had, I'm going on and on and on. But anyway, the Dobsons had a lot of vacation every year. They had like 12 weeks of vacation. And Bridget called me one day and she said, "Darling, I'm going to make you the interim script editor when we're on vacation." And I was like, no, I can't. I don't know how to do that. And she says, "It's easy. If you like something, keep it. If you don't, cut it or change it." And I was like, no, you don't understand. I have no business with my hands on these writer scripts, because they were all, I mean, it was Bob Guza and Courtney Simon and Patrick Mulcahy had just left and Chuck Pratt. And here I come off 6 months on Generations and I got my hands on their scripts. But she was like, "You're going to be fine, darling. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine." And I was fine and it all worked out. But anyway, I was there for 2 years and then Santa Barbara got canceled and I started to think that I was a curse. But then my agent called me and she said that Days of Our Lives wanted to talk to me. That was Sherry Anderson at that time. She was the head writer. And that Wendy Rich had just taken over at General Hospital and she was interested in talking to me. So I interviewed with Sherry first. She was a lovely woman, but there was something about the energy in the building that was a little strange to me. And then I went over to talk to Wendy Rich at General Hospital and the buzz was so different. It was like exciting. There was excitement in the air because she had just taken over from Gloria Monty. And so something new was going on, and she was putting her team together, and it just felt really good. And so she hired me, and I was there for 19 years. And then I went to Bold and the Beautiful, and I was there for 12 and a half. And then my show got a green light.
I want to talk about General Hospital and also talk about episode 2 of my podcast. We talked about rape storylines and highlighted Luke and Laura in General Hospital. But instead of spending time on the incident from the late 70s, I really wanted to explore Lucky, Luke and Laura's son, finding out about the rape 20 years later. You wrote that storyline, which is such a great example of how the soap opera form is not about one very special episode. It allows characters to come back and deal with accountability. How did that storyline come about? What were you trying to accomplish when you wrote it?
Well, I was raped when I was 12 years old. So I know what that experience does to a woman, to a girl. And then in the 70s, I was a General Hospital fan, and I watched Luke and Laura and the disco rape. And, you know, they had all that chemistry, and the show decided to call it a mutual seduction. But it was rape, right? She said no. She screamed no. So when I got on the show and I started writing for the characters, I just wanted to call a rape a rape. And so I'm thinking, well, how do I get there? So I thought, what if Lucky comes upon the aftermath of a girl that he knows that was just raped, and he goes through her struggle? You know, she's a shattered person, and he helps put her back together. And then he finds out what happened with Luke and Laura. And then, you know, it's like, let me call Tony Geary and see if he'll be on board. But to have him say, yeah, I raped her, right? So that was the genesis of it. You know, I wanted to call a rape, basically. And I also wanted to tell the story of a girl's survival of an experience like that. And that was really satisfying for me personally, because, you know, it is a survival story. You know, you are shattered, and you do have to put the pieces of yourself back together. And back then, like when it happened to me, we didn't have those resources as Black people on the South Side of Chicago. You know, we didn't go to shrinks. We didn't talk about stuff like that, right? My rapist went to jail. There was a trial, and he went to jail. But then once that was over, we weren't supposed to talk about it anymore, right? So a whole bunch of stuff did not get resolved for me that did get resolved for me through the writing of the story. So it's important on a lot of levels. And Becky Herbst, who played Elizabeth, still plays Elizabeth, the rape victim. Wendy always ran a PSA number at the end of the stories that had to do with the rape. And we got so many letters from women who said that they were inspired by either her performance or my story. And they picked up the phone and they called that number and they got help. And so it was just so satisfying on so many different levels. It's really like just, it makes me tear up to think about it.
Well, thank you for sharing your story. And I watched Elizabeth's rape in real time as a college student. And, you know, again, it just really speaks to the form of what I think daytime soaps can do that other television shows cannot.
Yeah. Because, you know, these characters come into your home every single day. You know, well, now it's a little different, you know, because you can stream a whole week at once or whatever. But back then, you know, it was like you every single day, the audience builds affinities with these characters, especially if they watch them, like, you know, over a long, long period of time. And you can use that to educate, you know. You can use it to just let people know that it's okay to feel a certain way, you know, because your audience is so plugged into those characters. They love those characters so much. And I think that's a big difference between daytime and nighttime. You know, it's like once a week you get your Grey's Anatomy fix, but you're at watching General Hospital. You're watching Beyond the Gates 5 days a week, and you're really starting to care about the characters. You know, you're loving them, or you're hating them, or you're loving to hate them. But soap operas bring out passion in viewers in a way that other mediums don't.
And that's how I feel about Robin Scorpio. We're the same age. I'm 6 years old watching her. And right. I've seen her grow up and have relationships, get married, be a mother.
Right, right. Yeah. I think it's the best medium ever. That's why I like your podcast, because you treat it well.
Thank you. What has it been like being a Black woman in the writer's room? Did you feel supported? Were you the only one? Did you have to fight for representation?
In my journey through the ranks, there haven't been a whole lot of Black writers. I've been the only one a lot of times, but I can't say that I've ever felt discriminated against or unheard. And maybe that's just, you know, dumb luck that I just ended up in good situations with good people. I mean, it's like my experience has been mostly as a writer as opposed to a Black writer.
Did you know that you wanted to create your own soap? Did you aspire to be a showrunner?
I didn't know that it was a soap. I wanted to create a show about rich Black people, because you didn't see it. You didn't see rich Black people, you know. And so I wrote this is how I met Sheila, actually, Sheila Duxworth. I had written a pilot as a sample about a rich Black family that lived in Beverly Hills. And I wrote it with Vivica Fox in mind. This was, back in the 2000s, 20 years ago, something like that. I wrote it with Vivica Fox in mind, and Vivica really liked the script. And so she sent it to, at the time it was Terry Edmonds. They had Soul Food on Showtime.
Oh, Tracy Edmonds?
Yes. And Sheila Duxworth was the woman that's where the script landed. And she really liked it, and she wanted to meet me. And they couldn't do anything with it, but she said to me, you know what, we're going to work together one of these days. And then in 2018, I worked on a nighttime show called Ambitions. And Sheila was with Will Packer's company at the time, and they were producing it. And so I thought, oh, here she is, right? You know, she was right. We're going to work together on this project. But she had it in her head that she wanted to create a Black soap. I had it in my head that I wanted to do a soap about rich Black people, a show about rich Black people. And when she got the presidency of the NAACP CBS venture, she picked up the phone and called me, and she said, are you ready? Let's do this.
What was it like to get that phone call all those years later?
I was like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to create a show. A soap, right? And she said, yeah, you do. You just don't know you do. And so, you know, I wrote a Bible and turned it in, and it got, you know, reception for it. It was really, really good. And I pitched it to Procter & Gamble, and I pitched it here, and I pitched it there, you know, wherever they sent me. And then 4 years went by. And, you know, I thought, well, I never thought anything was going to come of it. Sheila always believed in it. I never thought anything was going to come of it, because soaps don't get greenlit anymore. They get canceled, right? So I was like, well, okay, this will be a good COVID project. I'll make some money. I'm not giving up my day job over here at Bold and the Beautiful. And, you know, and I'll use a muscle that I haven't used before, right? And like I said, 4 years went by, and that didn't surprise me. What surprised me was getting that call saying, Procter & Gamble is a go, we're greenlit.
So Beyond the Gates premiered in February. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, soaps are getting canceled, not greenlit. How did this show get greenlit? And how does a soap writer connect with the NAACP to do that?
Well, that was over my pay grade. You know, Sheila was the link there between the NAACP and myself. How it happened, I have no idea. I still have no idea. It's like, it's the most surreal thing that has ever happened to me, that this thing that was in my head now lives and breathes, and it wears clothes, and it talks, and it walks. And it's like, I look at the show sometimes, and it's just like, whoa, how did that even happen?
Well, I want you to know that I have not missed an episode of Beyond the Gates.
Oh, great.
I watch every single day. You know, when I come home, in episode 5, I interview my daughter who was 8, who says, no, I don't. I had told her I wanted her to watch Young and the Restless when she was home sick from school. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. Well, now she wants to watch Beyond the Gates with me.
I love it. So the tradition continues.
I'm like, finally, somebody wants to watch with me. There's so much to love about the show. I love that they're just classic soap elements, delicious slaps, all kinds of villains, the jilted lover, the jerk husband, the criminal. Was there something that you were trying to do differently with the Black cast that you hadn't seen done before in daytime?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wanted the show to be based in a loving family, you know, where the Duprees, they might be mad at each other, they might be through with each other, but when at the end of the day, they're going to come together and protect each other and support each other. And I hadn't seen that really on daytime. You know, on daytime, you get occasional families, right? But they kind of, you know, they come and go, they appear, they disappear. I remember one time, I've mentioned this before, on all my children, they had all the Black people living in the same house, like some kind of rooming house. It was Jesse and Angie and Jesse's brother. You remember that?
Yes.
Right? They all lived in the same house. Well, I didn't want that. You know, and I wanted to create characters you had never seen before, right? Like, you know, the civil rights activist who became a senator, the girl group singer who became an icon, you know, the model who became a momager of her, you know, it's just different kind of characters, you know. I just wanted, you know, the assistant DA who became a famous criminal defense attorney and just dumped his wife for his younger paralegal. It's all that juicy stuff that you get from any kind of soap. And I just wanted to put it in this world of Black people.
I wish I could take Nicole's advice and magically stop thinking about it. But every time I walk past that banquet room, see their wedding prep, and now they're gonna live here? Maybe I should move?
Unacceptable. You belong in Fairmont Crest. Your father's father designed and built the first houses in this community, including our family home where you were born and raised. No Dupree is going to be chased out of Fairmont by a couple of interlopers.
You know, they're messy. You know, they're rich. They're important in their community, but they're messy as hell.
Well, you have to have mess to have drama for a good soap.
Yeah.
And it does come across that they have each other's back. One person stands up in the family, and Duprees, they all stand up.
And don't let Anita raise her hand. They all
that finger. Yes. Yes. Like Malcolm X in the movie where he raises his hand and then points. What I also love and appreciate are what I call the Black Easter eggs of the show. Mm. Nicole Dupree having Tougaloo College, a HBCU diploma on the wall, references to books gifted, you know, Langston Hughes, Ralph Ellison, soul music, even the language. You know, there's some Black slang that's there that if you don't get it, you don't get it. And it's not over explaining. And then, you know, I used to hate Black soap opera hair back in the day. I was like, they don't know how to do Black people's hair. And the clothes, the fashion, the hair, it's all there in the soap.
Yeah, it's really beautiful to look at.
But can you talk about the subtleties? I mean, yes, Vernon Dupree was a civil rights activist. He talks about the movement sometimes, but some of these smaller things like Ebony Magazine.
A lot of that stuff I have to give Sheila credit for. You know, it's like who went to what college and, you know, what medical school and what's on the walls and the founding fathers of the country club and stuff like that. That's kind of her area of expertise. The music industry stuff mostly comes from me because of my experience in the music industry. You know, it's a collaboration. You know, it's like it's all of us sort of trying to make the show as authentic as possible and as relatable as possible. And like you said, if you know, you know. And if you don't, then keep it moving. We're not trying to preach, you know. And I don't know if you know this. I've told the story before, but I named the diner Orphy Jean's after my mother. My mother did not live to see any of this. She did not live to see me become a soap writer. But now, as long as this show is on the air, in reruns, in syndication, streaming, whatever, she lives on. And that means a lot to me personally, that we did that. The picture in the country club over the Dupree table, the picture of that man there, that's George Cheeks' father. Sheila...
And George Cheeks is the head of CBS mm-hmm. Entertainment.
CBS, and he's one of the co-heads of Paramount Plus. He's a big champion of the show. He's a lot of the reason why 4 years later you're seeing a result. And some of Sheila's family are on the walls of the country club as the founding father. So we have like little personal Easter eggs in there, you know.
In 2024, when George Cheeks announced that this soap was coming, he talked about Black women over-indexing as soap watchers, which I didn't know. Is that something that you knew being in the industry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Black women have probably kept Young and the Restless as number one for 30 years, Black women, you know, yeah. Black women love their soaps. And that was the other thing, too. It's like, let's give them something where they can see themselves.
You mentioned creating the Bible. And I know the Bible is the like the big document where you're world building for a soap.
Yeah.
Can you, without revealing too much about what we may see in the future, can you talk about what you were world building?
The weird thing is I'm more of a vessel for this project than anything else. It's like I would go on my morning walks and the characters would sort of come to me and kind of tell me who they were and how they fit and how they connected. And from there, I just started to think of how to use them, you know, how to blow things up, you know, how to do this and how to do that, how to build to this. It's weird being a writer because it's hard to verbalize what that process is. Like I said, for me on this show, it's like, it's bigger than me. It sort of came through me, you know, the Bible was an interesting process because, there really aren't any templates for Bibles and for soap Bibles anymore. And Sheila did not want a big, long document that nobody would read. So I had to just sort of figure out what that Bible was, right? So what I did was I wrote three documents. One was character, a location and character. One was week one, and one was like a 6 month projection. And soap writing is a very fluid process. That's why you really don't want to spend a lot of time writing in a Bible what's going to happen in 2 years from now, because you don't know. You know, it's like you're on the same ride that the characters are on. And sometimes you think something is great, but it doesn't work on screen, right? So you got to change course. Or there's something that surprises you that you didn't think of when you first came up with the idea of the show. So it's a fluid process. You know, every day you're going, you know what? What if we did this? And that was never in anybody's mind until you saw something on screen.
Do you think of those things after you see an episode or see the actors performing, or does that change maybe happen as you're writing?
It's all of the above. I mean, like for an example, with Elizabeth's rape, my first thought was that the girl who got raped would be just some girl, some extra, right? Some girl we didn't really know, because it's mostly lucky story, right? But then we had Elizabeth and her sister. And so Wendy said, why don't we make it one of those girls? Because at least that's who the audience knows. And I picked Elizabeth. So that's kind of a small example of how that happens. It's like it went from being some random girl crawling out of the bushes to being a character, you know? So that kind of stuff happens all the time, you know? And it can come from watching something in an episode. It can come from chemistry between characters. You know, you might see some chemistry that you didn't know was going to be there, and you decide, you know what, they'd make a good couple. Let's start building that.
Why did you set Beyond the Gates in the Washington, D.C. area as opposed to Beverly Hills?
That's what Sheila wanted. When she came to me, that she wanted to do the soap opera based around a rich black family in the DMV area. It was basically in Prince George, Maryland.
Oh, I've been saying Potomac all this time.
Yeah, that was sort of the gated community, right? That was kind of the template for that. So, but that was her idea. That's what she came to me with. I want to do this family in this area because there are a lot of gated communities around there, and it's close to DC and all of that. So,
going back to Black women over-indexing as soap watchers, you know, we watch white characters with no problem. And here in Beyond the Gates, the core family is a Black family. Do you and the producers and the team think about how comfortable white daytime watchers are with not being centered?
No.
Yeah.
No. It's like, this is the stuff we're doing, and, you know, all are welcome. But I write the characters and the situations. I'm really not kind of thinking too much beyond that. That's above my pay grade.
What has the reception been like for you so far?
You know, people seem to love it. One of the weirdest things about this is to scroll my Twitter feed and, like, there's so much talk about my show. And the other thing that's been really gratifying is the support from the daytime community. You know, it's like everybody I know in this community has been just so happy and so supportive, because it's good for the genre to have a new soap on the air. And so there hasn't been any kind of jealousy or, you know, anything like that. Like last year at the Daytime Emmys, it's like everybody was coming up to me and hugging me and going, this is so wonderful. And we can't wait to watch it. And I went to the Bold and the Beautiful's 38th anniversary party a few months ago. And Brad Bell was watching the show. You know, he's able to talk to me about the characters and the storylines and stuff. So it's like the support has been amazing. And then, like I said, you know, you go online and people are talking about it. And there's a Facebook page that has over 100,000 followers. And that, to me, that just blows me away.
You know, there's a Beyond the Gates podcast, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I've heard it. I have heard it. And it's... that podcast has been going on like months before it ever hit the air. So, so that's mind blowing.
And also watching the show, you can really see the financial investment. There are lots of extras. The clothes are so fabulous. My mom and I always talk about, my mom says, Anita Dupree looks like she's going to a cocktail party all the time, even if she's just sitting at home.
That's Jerisa Featherstone, our costume designer. She is awesome.
For people who are new to daytime as actors, what's it like? I mean, because it's just so many lines to remember.
Yeah.
What has that transition been like for some of those actors? How do you coach people into the daytime world?
You know, I think you just have to, there's no learning curve, really, because it's like, let's go, moving on. You know, it's like you have to, a lot of actors say it's a muscle, you know, it's a muscle that develops. And not only do they have to learn the dialogue for the day, then they have to forget that dialogue and learn new dialogue for the next time, right? So it's like my hat is off to them. You know, that's the thing too. It used to really bug me when daytime people were treated like the ugly stepchildren of the industry, because nobody works harder. You know, we're putting out 5 hours a week here, And that's a lot. And it's a lot of paper, it's a lot of writing, it's a lot of memorization, it's a lot of acting, it's a lot of producing. It's just amazing people dedicated to excellence that need to be appreciated for it.
I think I also read that you were thinking about Diana Ross as the matriarch. Can you tell that story?
Well, when I was growing up, the Supremes were everything, right? It's like they were beautiful. They were aspirational. They were three girls from the projects who became Cinderellas. And so, and I've always loved them, always loved them. I've always carried them in a special place in my heart. So when I was thinking about the matriarch, I was thinking, what if Diana Ross married John Lewis?
Wow, now I have a completely different visual of the Duprees. What storylines in soaps get you the most excited?
It's the drama, I think, and sometimes the social issues. But I do, I like the levity too. You know, you have to kind of have a balance. I just like the whole canvas, you know, your A story, your B story, your C story, your runner stories and all of that. I mean, it's like there's value in all of it. But me personally, I like the drama. I like the big blow ups. I like what happened last week. I love that.
we were all waiting for that big reveal with Ted, Dana Leslie / Sherry and Eva.
I know, yeah. They were so good. I love this company of actors. They are so amazing. They just they blow me away every single day. I'm so lucky, you know, to have them, you know. And the writers, you know, I've got an amazing team of writers, very experienced in daytime, most of them, but so committed and so dedicated and so smart. And I couldn't be happier with this whole crew.
Throughout Stories Without End, we've talked a lot about the lasting and enduring legacy of soaps. What do you think makes these stories endure 90 years later after their invention?
They're relatable, you know? Most people can look at a favorite character on a soap opera and say, I felt like that before, or that happened to me. So it becomes personal, you know, in a way. And I think that's what makes it last, because it's the only medium that really feels that way. I mean, you get passionate about your nighttime shows too, but like I said earlier, you know, these characters are coming into your home 5 days a week, and you really do really relate and really get attached. And I think that's it.
Is there anything that you can tease for us that will be coming up in Beyond the Gates?
No.
I just had to ask.
We do have something coming up pretty soon that's kind of a shocker, but that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for making the time. It's really been a joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for your generosity.
Oh, thank you, Natalie. And I appreciate what you're doing.
And yes, thank you for listening.